So really be comfortable and relaxed, because we're going to have a Dharma talk now and discussion. And then we're going to do some meditation and really make yourself comfortable. Forgiveness. Has been such a big part, as I said before, such a big part of my life. When I came to the practice, I had so much anger, so many resentments. Actually, what started me practicing, you know, a big part of the turning point for me to start practicing was when, for the first time in my life, I really realized that I wasn't just a victim. That it wasn't everyone else's fault, and that I had responsibility, that I had created so much of the suffering in my life that I was experiencing. When we feel like we're completely powerless, when we feel like we're just a victim, then we feel like, well, I can't even forgive because I just don't have that power. I don't have that capacity. That when we take responsibility and we realize, actually, I'm the one holding on to all of this shit. I'm the one clinging. And I can let go. I don't have to carry around hatred my whole life. But first we have to take responsibility and realize I'm the one clinging to the past. And it is possible to change our relationship to the past. And more than possible, it's necessary. In the Metta Sutta, when the Buddha talks about, he starts the teachings on loving kindness with the phrase, "This is what should be done by those who are skilled in goodness and know the path of peace." That always strikes me a bit strange. Like, if I was skilled in goodness already, if I already knew the path of peace, then why do I got to do all this work? I'd like to edit the Buddha's words. And actually, I see this much more of a kind of, this is what should be done by those who wish to be skilled in goodness, who wish to know peace. Really, it's a clear proclamation to me of, like, if you want to be happy, if you want to be free, if you want to be part of creating a positive change in this world, these are some of the requisites. Often from metta, all we get is the loving kindness practice. May I be happy, may I be at ease. Right early in it, he talks about to be humble and not conceited, to be contented and easily satisfied, as a practice, humility and acceptance. Later in it, he says, let none deceive another or despise any being and any state. So a practice of honesty, not non-deception, and to free ourselves from despising, right? So this is the archaic language. This is the language of to not have any resentments, to be free from holding on to anger and resentment and spite and despising, judging any being in any state, right? So this is big. We're not talking about, like, you know, just forgive mom and dad, but that's big too. Any being in any state. To forgive everyone, everything. That's a tall order, huh? Forgive everyone, everything. Any being includes you. And that is often the most difficult, any being includes ourselves. He goes on, let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Again, freeing ourselves from anger and ill will. And what do we do when we haven't forgiven? There's always that kind of feeling of, I wouldn't mind if they got hit by a bus. Right? That kind of feeling of ill will, and I'd be happy if my enemies were harmed. They harmed me, or others that I love, or this planet that I care about, or whatever it is. And I, often the outcome of resentment, of spite, of anger, is that we wish harm upon our enemies. So the Dharma is so much more than mindfulness. And it's so much more than just saying the loving kindness phrases. We are being encouraged to completely purify our hearts, to let go completely. Ajahn Chah, Jack Kornfield's teacher, the Thai forest master, the teacher of many of my teachers. He said, in some level we could, and he's talking about mindfulness really, but he said you could really boil down all of the Dharma to just letting go. Because in mindfulness, so much that that's what we have to do in Vipassana, let go, you're clinging, let go. He said if you let go a little bit, you'll have a little bit of happiness. If you let go a lot, you'll have a lot of happiness. Play with this around forgiveness, right? If you forgive, if you let go and forgive a little bit, you'll have a little bit of happiness. If you let go of the resentments and the spite and the anger and the... You'll have a lot of happiness. A lot of freedom. If you let go absolutely, you'll have total freedom from the past. Towards the end of the Metta Sutta, the Buddha says, by not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one. So this is a clear instruction. When we're holding on to resentment, we're holding on to a fixed view of someone or of ourselves, right? There's this, I did this, and now I'm holding this fixed view of something that I did how long ago? Or something that happened to me, or that happened how long ago? I see this so clearly in my own life, being a recovering drug addict, and you know how I can fix myself in this view of like I was violent, I was dishonest, I was so unskillful. And I can get this fixed view of like I'm that teenage crackhead and that's who I am. But that was 25 years ago. That's not who I am. By not holding to a fixed view, by understanding impermanence and change and transformation. Likewise, like even right now, I can think of my stepfather being abusive to me, to my mother, to my brother and sister. And I can still think of, that's 35 years ago, but he's still fixed. There's a place in my mind where he's still that son of a bitch. Fixed in what he did 30 years ago. You notice that? Whatever resentment you have, how much it just becomes this. He's not that guy anymore. And maybe some of the people we're angry at still are schmucks. Right? Maybe some of them are still really confused people. But the fixed view does not serve us and is not reality. So a big part of forgiveness is opening to letting go of fixed views, of letting go of So anyway, some of those, for you Buddhists in the room, scriptural Buddhist encouragement towards forgiveness. Because I asked some Buddhist teachers early on, I said, where does the Buddha teach about forgiveness? And they said, he doesn't. Until I started to read the scripture. Because there's nowhere that the term forgiveness, there's nothing that translates as forgiveness. But this is the clearest encouragement in the Metta Sutta. Not to despise, not to wish ill will upon, not to hold to fixed views. Sounds like forgiveness to me. Sound like forgiveness to you? Some really important pieces about the process and experience of forgiveness. One, and I think that this is key, and if you haven't heard it before, please really investigate it and see if it fits for you. It feels like a necessity to separate, in order to forgive, to separate the actor from what happened, the person that we are resentful at, from what we're resentful about. Separating the actor from the action. That action was an impermanent act of ignorance. Act of anger, act of lust, act of betrayal, act of... The person who acted in that way is who we're trying to forgive, the person. We're not necessarily trying to forgive the action. And that it's completely okay to never forgive the action. And that some actions are unforgivable. But no people are unforgivable. Makes a big difference. Because again, our tendency towards fixed views is, you killed somebody? You are a murderer forever. You are your actions. Now, in the Buddhist world, we understand that we're fully responsible for our actions. We have karmic responsibility. We don't get away with anything, but it doesn't become our identity. It's not who we are forever. And so in separating the abuser from the abuse, you don't want to forgive abuse. You don't want to condone abuse or ignorance or violence or betrayal. Or even just the bad drivers that we have to forgive. Right? Because there's the big stuff, and then there's just the little annoyances. There's just the little everyday, you know, difficult people that also calls for some forgiveness. There's the big stuff in our lives that we've been holding on to. There's this thing that I heard. I don't have the quote of it right now. It was in my second book. This guy says, forgiveness is the name of love practiced among people who love poorly. And that the hard truth is, we all love poorly. And that forgiveness becomes a necessity. We have to forgive every day, every hour, unceasingly. Just like letting go. Just like Ajahn Chah saying, this whole practice is about letting go. Separating the actor from the action. Does that make sense? Is there any... Have you heard that before? Do you know that? Does that work for you? Take some time, I think, to reflect on sometimes. Because we're so used to just thinking about, no, they are what they did. And I've been thinking about them that way my whole life. a big one. My father, being Jewish, when he started this practice, he said, how am I ever going to forgive Hitler? And we all have a Hitler in our psyche. Somebody who you're pretty committed to never forgiving. Maybe it is Hitler. Maybe it's someone else. He said a couple of things happened to him that helped, but the biggest thing was that I didn't have to forgive the Holocaust. I just had to forgive the confused, delusional, insane person, the suffering person. Somehow or another, he began to think of Adolf as having been sexually abused as a child. He said, I could forgive the traumatized and abused child who became the monster. I couldn't forgive the adult. Like I was talking about yesterday, even with myself, I could forgive myself as a child. As an adult, it was really difficult. But I could go back. Sometimes that helps. It's a good trick in forgiveness. Think of your enemies as children and what kind of pain they may have experienced that led to the kind of unskillful confusion they acted out as adults. Whether it's true or not, it can be really helpful for us to have compassion. And forgiveness and compassion completely connected. You see that, right? So much of what we're seeing, in order to forgive ourselves or others or any beings, is the compassion of the understanding that all harm, all abuse, all betrayal, all unskillful actions, all unskillful actions come out of ignorance, come out of confusion. So often are coming from not being able to hold our pain and our pain spilling out onto others. Or our pain being turned on ourselves as criticisms, as judgments, as becoming self-worth and self-esteem issues. In the traditional forgiveness practice, which we will do, there's several ways to start. Often, sometimes we'll start with ourselves and forgiving ourselves, and then we'll move on to asking for forgiveness from those who we've harmed, and then we'll go on to offering forgiveness to those who have harmed us. Because it's threefold, right? You get that. It's us, who we hurt, who hurt us, how we hurt ourselves. It became clear at some point, I think some of my teachers, my father and Jack Kornfield, started saying, you know, it's useful if we start by asking for forgiveness. If we start by getting into the humility of seeing how many times were we the abuser? How many times were we the one that was unskillful, that was dishonest, that betrayed somebody's trust or confidence or... And all of us have to acknowledge, like, yeah, I've been the one that has caused harm to others. And there's not a person in here that would dare to say, I've never hurt anyone. And why did we hurt others? Why do we need to ask for forgiveness? It becomes pretty obvious that because we were in pain, we were afraid, we were just unable to hold our confusion, and we spilled it out. And almost always it spills out onto the people that we care about, right? But that also gives us the insight into, oh, well, why did they hurt me? I know for sure that all of the harm that I caused in my life, and it was a lot, was it because I was in so much pain and so much confusion and so much ignorance. And now I can look at the people who hurt me and see their pain and their confusion and their ignorance, and not just see them as the enemy, and not just see them as evil, or but to see, oh wow, they're really suffering. And when we're hurting, we hurt others. Couple more things. So important in forgiveness to be patient, to be gentle with ourselves, to be compassionate with ourselves. There can be a tendency, even in this conversation, to think about Hitler and go right to what my father called, you know, the 500-pound weight. That's impossible. And just set yourself up with like, fuck that. I'm never going to forgive him. I can't. It's impossible. It's a 500-pound weight. I can't lift that. But if we start small, and the encouragement is to start small, start with the everyday annoyances. Start with the little resentments. Start with the 10-pound weights, the difficult people that you work with, the unpleasant people on the tube, the challenging, I don't know, are the cab drivers really bad in London? In New York, like, that's the big thing. Like, how am I going to forgive the cab drivers? I've made a career out of hating them, and now I have to forgive them. You know, those ones, not the people that have really directly abused us, but just the sort of difficult people in our lives. And then we work up. And it's actually an act of kindness and to not go right to the impossible and to start with some practical and then what we're really forgiving is we're forgiving suffering. We're not forgiving abuse. We're having compassion for suffering. And we're understanding that all suffering is created by suffering. I don't think that forgiveness will ever happen all by itself. I think that, it, like most of Dharma, it takes intentional effort. I believe, and I've seen really clearly in my own mind, that there's a part of our psyche that it's its job to resent. There's a part of maybe the ego, the superego, I don't know. There's some part of our mind. And it's like that part of the mind's job to remind us about who hurt us. It's trying to protect us. And it's regularly saying, hey, intimacy is not safe. Remember, you were betrayed. Vulnerability, not safe. Remember how much that hurt last time you were vulnerable? And sometimes it actually goes to the place of loving is not safe. Forgiving is not safe. Hold on to anger. Hold on to resentment. Hold on to ill will. It is protecting you, is what that voice says. Now, even 20 years into doing forgiveness practice, that voice still arises in my mind. It is Mara. It's what we were talking about yesterday. It's that voice of Mara that kind of wants to keep us stuck. I don't think that it goes away. That our only hope is that through the forgiveness practice, through the mindfulness practice, through kindness and compassion, is that we change our relationship to it. And I think I said this yesterday, that when it comes up, we're able to have a relationship to that voice that says, thank you for trying to protect me. Thank you for trying to keep me safe by holding to resentment, by not wanting to forgive. But I'm actually okay. I'm totally fine now. As you might say, I'm sorted. I'm sorted. It's all right. Is that without the right context for sorted?
Yeah.
I remember when I came to the place where I felt like I had finally forgiven everyone, everything, and it was 10 years into trying. And in the beginning, sometimes it works like this. There's like three columns, and maybe even just as we said forgiveness today, you might have unconsciously created three columns. People I'm willing and want to forgive? Maybe. Never. And that maybe sort of unconsciously that part of our mind creates that. Of like, okay, it's been long enough, or I'm ready for these ones. I'm open to the possibility of these ones. Never. And quite interesting to investigate, where are you towards yourself in those columns? Sometimes you might actually find, and I think that for me in the beginning, that there was a way in which I had put myself into the unforgivable. And then shifted eventually into the maybe, and then shifted completely into the I want to, I'm willing to. And for me, it took quite a long time. And came to the place where I finally felt free, completely free. Even from Hitler, even from the abusive people in my life, even from myself. Where I felt compassionate, I felt loving, I felt kind. I felt like I could separate all of the actions of all of my enemies from the actors. And with that moment of freedom came a delusion. And the delusion was, I forgot about impermanence. And I thought that, I don't know why, but for some reason I thought, eventually I'll forgive everyone for everything forever. It doesn't work that way. You can't forgive forever. You can forgive for one moment. You can forgive now. Like everything else, you can forgive right now. And that's it. And for me, it was like 10 years of then, finally I came to that one moment where I forgave right now. And I thought, oh, cool, I'm done. Check that off and forgive everyone. Check. And maybe if we have a kind of Buddha-like enlightenment where we forgive everyone and then we maintain so much mindfulness that when it returns, when Mara and the, when it returns, we just relate to it. But I certainly wasn't there. So when it returned, I picked it right up and I was like, yeah, they do suck. I am angry. And then, oh, I have to forgive again. So that's an important part of humility and part of the process that says, yes, forgiveness is an ongoing process. It's not a permanent, and we do not have the power to just say, you know, that sort of like, I forgive you? Really? How long have you been working on it? Do we really have that process? At one point I said to my dad, we were having some beef. And I said, I forgive you. He said, bullshit. And he was right. Like, I was saying it, but I hadn't actually done the work to forgive him. I wanted to pretend. I wanted to look like I was forgiving. And he was right. And I had to look at it and say, oh, actually, you're right. I haven't. Especially now that you said bullshit. Some of my thoughts. I want to turn it to Vinny for some of his experience.
Beautiful that we can only forgive in this moment. It's the only moment we can be free as well, you know? Freedom doesn't exist in some other time. We can't be free in the future. I use notes for my talks. So excuse me. You know, I just want you to just check in with yourself as we are in this stimulating Dharma discussion, this talk, right? And notice if there's an aspect of it that is that. It's kind of, you know, it's kind of like TV that's good for you. Right? It's the Dharma talk. Stuff that I really like. And just notice if you're listening to the talk from, you know, one of these places that Noah was just talking about, from one of these columns. I remember listening to the talks and having this idea in my mind that it wouldn't be possible for me, for not what I had been through, not what I had done, these other people perhaps, but even the possibility that forgiveness was possible, even for me, mind-blowing. Took a long time to believe. Not a practice. So just, if you're listening to this talk through the idea of some kind of litmus test of whether forgiveness is possible, I understand. Forgiveness is not, you know, like Noah was distinguishing between the actor and the action. There's another distinction as well between allowing someone back into your heart and allowing someone back into your house. Very different. I could never want to see you again and forgive you. It's really, really okay. We don't want to say that we're condoning abusive relationships, if we're accepting unacceptable behavior. I think you made that really clear. But I really want to point that out. That's the cost that we pay when we don't forgive. Instead of, we can send forgiveness, you know, there's a boundless quality, a lot like loving kindness and compassion. We can send it out to the whole world except for that mother effer. It's like, do we really want to live in that prison? Right? Because that's a little bit of a, that's a little part of my heart that's closed off. And I don't want to give anyone that power. All of the Buddha's teachings were about, you know, he said, I teach about suffering and how to alleviate suffering. I have tasted the fruit of this practice, this forgiveness practice. It may have alleviated more suffering than any other part of my practice. I could say that. Yeah. It's not about getting caught up in the story of what happened. Because there comes a point where we want to be free more than we want to be right. You know? Just sit with that one. Let that marinate. No, because what that is that's still the part of the case where you're arguing your case. We're in a whole different part of the process now. Right? I'd just like to talk a little bit about who is actually paying the cost of this non-forgiveness. Because I always held it like I'm never going to forgive you because that would be betraying my mom, you know, or whatever reasons we have. What we're saying is, whatever happened, happened. Right? It did happen. Right? We're not condoning the action, just like Noah said. We're just saying that it was. Right? Jack Kornfield puts it so beautifully. He said, forgiveness is giving up the hope of a better past. You know? You don't have to write any of this down. You'll be able to get it on the podcast, I believe. So you can continue to take notes if you want, if it's helpful. But you'll be able to get it through London Insight. But I love that. Giving up the hope of a better past. So forgiveness in one aspect is just like, wow, this happened. Now it's okay, what is my relationship to it? How do I want to be with that truth? I love what you were saying about seeing ourselves as victims. You know, Shantideva has a beautiful poem about it. It says, when crows see a dying snake, they behave like eagles. When we see ourselves as victims, we are hurt by trifling failures. It just illuminates how easily we can be hurt when we are in that victim place where everything is an offense. I totally grew up in that mindset. Not sure why. No, I think there was just a lot of, I was a heavy-hearted kid. Had a lot I had been exposed to early on. So it's just kind of, in those developmental years, that's how I saw the world. But ultimately, forgiveness is not about other people or their behavior. Imagine that. This whole time I had my focus on the wrong part of it. Forgiveness is about how are we going to live in our hearts? Like I was saying, if we're closed off, if there's little rooms that I can't go in, if there's a way I can send it out to everybody but these few unforgivables, how free are we? Within our own hearts. There's no scoreboard when it comes to forgiveness. There's no comparing. You know, I never hurt nobody the way I was hurt. I would have never done what that person did. Thank God that I was never that confused or deluded or unskillful. And my enemies may, they may fight that that belief. They may think that I was just as unskillful. Right? But we give ourselves some benefit of the doubt. Hopefully. I believe that everyone was doing the best they can with what they currently believe. That's not an excuse. It's just a way to understand it, because just like Noah said, I know I was doing the best I can this whole time. I've been doing the best I can for a while, and I still hurt people. His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, was talking to a pilgrim that had just made the trip from Tibet, you know, walking. And he'd gotten tortured for years, faced death many times. He's sitting there with the Dalai Lama, and the Dalai Lama says, were you ever in any real danger? The man looked at him and said, only when I began to hate them. That's when it got scary. When I started living out of that place in my heart. When we begin to become shut down and estranged from our own hearts, this is the cost. This is the great cost. Noah talked about it beautifully, this protection, this armor that so many of us needed throughout the course of our lives. There's a beautiful story of the clay Buddha. There was this beautiful Buddha. Actually, it was kind of haggard, if I remember the story right.
The haggard Buddha.
Yeah. It was kind of rough clay, but it was big. It was in this monastery in Thailand, and they were noticing it was cracking. It was pretty rough clay, you know. And as they began to try to repair it, they noticed, wow, look at this. There's actually something bright in there, something shiny. And as they picked away at it, they realized that this whole thing was made of solid gold, but covered in clay. In hundreds of years before, a neighboring army was coming in. The monks covered it up because they didn't want nobody to steal it. You know, all the monks left or were killed. The armies left and more monks came that didn't know what it was. Oh, wow, kind of rough, but big, big clay Buddha. This is all of our story. Of whatever we had to do to survive. What we had to weather and put over ourselves to protect our real value. And then we forget our own value. People around us, they forgot their value. They don't see, they see our clay Buddhas as well. What is it to rest in our the awareness of our true value? This forgiveness thing, it's like we close our hearts off, but we're closed in with the very thing we were trying to escape. This becomes a prison. And if we lock the door, I mean, we certainly have the keys. Catherine Ponder writes, when you hold resentment toward another, you're bound to that person or condition by an emotional link that is stronger than steel. Forgiveness is the only way to dissolve that link and be free. So forgiveness is a moving on. It's a letting go of that. Yeah, we're attached to a fixed view that keeps that person right here. I don't want that. Most of us live in a revenge model, you know, which is the easiest way to push away pain, to not feel it, to stay in the we were right mentality, right? But the what if we can no longer feel or hide in our anger and our righteousness? What would we have to feel then? If we allowed ourselves to honor the grief or to honor the betrayal, if we could put our resentment and anger aside, what would we be left feeling? What would I have to accept? And what would stop us from doing that? The question is not whether they deserve it, it's whether that we deserve it. Do we deserve to be free? That becomes the question. You gotta get out of this idea that it's for someone else. They don't even know whether you forgive them or not. They don't even remember you. You know what I mean? They're on with their life. When we refuse to forgive, we become the perpetrator and the victim. Because we replay it over and over until we die or we forgive. These are our choices. I have relived the horrors of my life enough. The common metaphor around it is drinking poison and expecting the other person to die. Confused. Noah said it beautifully in so many ways, but forgiveness is opening your heart to the qualities in another that you have found present in yourself. Opening with mercy, with forgiveness, kindness, which senses just like myself how another person could have got lost in the shadows of a confused, frightened, and angry mind. I have been lost in the shadows of that. I know this place. So we give up these stories and we allow that armor to soften a bit, to dissolve. Jojo Beck writes, our failure to know joy is a direct reflection of our inability to forgive. How can we know joy when we got a sack, 1,000-pound sack on our back? How can we move on and see the freshness of this moment when we're living these horrors of the past? And I think it's perfect that we begin with ourselves. It tenderizes the heart. We see, wow, man, I've been lost in the shadows of my mind too. I know what that's like. Okay. So we begin by just paying attention to the hurt. As Noah said yesterday, turning toward the suffering. You know, this boogeyman that we've been keeping a distance from for so many years. By caring for that. Instead of trying to get away from it. And through this process, we become more whole in ourselves. And therefore able to hold other people. To face our wounds with care and compassion. Not with blame. I mean, there's an old saying, blame is for God and small children. Scary. How do we see that? How do we see what's true? What was the pain in this person's life that allowed them to do this? I may never know the mystery of that. Why? You know, when I think about the things that have been done to me, why? I don't know. It's like this puppy. And we hear this puppy crying, so we go up to give it some love, and it starts to bite us, you know? And immediately my hand goes back, you know? I want to teach it a lesson. Came over here to give you love. You going to bite me? And we see that his leg has been caught in a trap. And trying to get out of the pain, afraid, desperate, he bites the very person that may be able to help. Hurt people, hurt people. My father was that hurt animal in my home. So hurt. He could do nothing else but spill that pain all over us. Even he's coming to meet me to go to Italy in a couple weeks. Even this is connected to forgiveness. When I asked my father why he had done the things he had done to my family, my mother, myself, he told me, I can't look at that. He said, if I look at that, I'll kill myself. And I don't want to kill myself. And I don't want him to kill himself. So I'm going to let go. Without the reasons. Doesn't matter so much the reasons. I just wanted to understand more. But that's not something that he can give me. Couldn't understand how I could forgive him and not betray my mother, her memory. And then I was a teenager and my mom died. And I wasn't, you know, I was standing there on the street corner when it happened. And I felt a terrible amount of guilt. The kind of guilt that I would drag through relationships and lovers and through every day of my life, I had felt this guilt. That allowed me to understand more of how my dad might have felt. If forgiveness is possible for me, I felt like it was possible for anyone. So this is why it was so important for me to start with me, to tenderize my heart. There was a belief that I had that if you knew me, you wouldn't really love me. Who could love someone that left their mother like that? It's not my experience now. My experience now is when people open their hearts to me, I fall in love with them. That's what happens. When people take that risk and are vulnerable, just with their truth, no matter what it is, it's like, oh, it's so tender and so beautiful. It's like, oh, I'm not worried about what role you played in this saga. Just the courage that I see you sitting in right now. Evil has no place in the recesses of our heart. But blindness, right? Blindness, self-protection, twisted through the distorted lens of ignorance and fear, that I understand. Self-protection twisted through the lens of ignorance and fear. This I understand. I'm just going to end with one of the Olympic forgiveness masters. Martin Luther King Jr. You know, can we see what's happening and hold it in compassion? We forgive for the freedom of our own heart. This is what he says. Throw us in jail and we will still love you. Threaten our children and bomb our homes and our churches. And as difficult as it is, we will still love you. Send your hooded perpetrators of violence into our communities at the midnight hours and drag us out on some wayside road and beat us and leave us half dead. And as difficult as that is, we will still love you. But be assured that we will wear you down by our capacity to suffer. And one day we will win our freedom. We will not only win freedom for ourselves, we will so appeal to your heart and your conscience that we will win in the process, and in our victory, we'll win freedom for you as well. And this will be a double victory. Because our freedoms are all bound up together. Your life has something to do with mine. MLK sets a rather high bar. But what he does is he shows us what's possible. What do you say, brother? Should we we...
I think we have to give him a break.
I think so, too.
I'm going to give you a stretch break. We'd like to ask you to stay in silence, to continue reflecting on these things before... our plan was to go into a meditation now, but we went a little long, and you might need to pee. So please stay in silence and stay sort of with your heart and with these reflections, and come right back, like 10-minute maximum stretch, pee. We're going to begin a meditation in 10 minutes.
This other door is...